Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Buddhism as a whole exhibits a plethora of meditation techniques. If you study Soto Zen, you learn Shikan Taza, Rinzai, Koan introspection, Tibetan, Dzogchen, and a plethora of other methods. In Theravada, we practice vipassana and some practice samatha. I'm not aware of any method that is not of great value, but although many trained in a specific method in the context of a specific school commonly become die-hard advocates for that method, it's always valid to ask, what if we are missing something? Maybe those guys over there are doing something that we have left out. Modern Buddhism is not producing a whole lot of fully awakened people, so this question always lies in the background. For this reason, it's always helpful to ask, what did the Buddha actually teach? That has become my approach to the Dharma. I want to talk about samadhi in this and some following talks, which is usually translated as concentration, but also as collectedness, unification, or absorption. I've begun translating it as inner composure for reasons that might become apparent in these talks. Samadhi is an extremely still, stable, composed state of mind. It is also the final step in the Noble Eightfold Path. The word samadhi derives from sam, together, plus a, towards, plus da, to bring or put, which means bring together or collect. The mind left on its own tends to be scattered, jumping from here to there, relentlessly churning, generally beyond control. Samadhi is a controlled state of mind in which the various factors of mind seem to run in a common direction. The word jhana, or meditation, is then used in the early Buddhist texts, most often to refer to four successively deeper stages of samadhi. I'll use the Pali terms samadhi and jhana for clarity. Within the Theravada tradition, there is a bit of controversy about what samadhi is and how we practice it. The reason is that the primary source on the matter is a 5th century text called the Visuddhimagga, or Path of Purification, written in Pali but composed almost 1,000 years after the Buddha, at a time when Buddhism was already developed in China and the roots of Zen were being established. The Visuddhimagga is taken as the meditation manual of authority for Theravada Buddhism and for Vipassana. Unfortunately, the Visuddhimagga doesn't always agree with what the Buddha says in the suttas. A bit of investigation shows that the word samadhi must have come to mean something quite different by the time of the Visuddhimagga. In the Visuddhimagga, samadhi is a state of profound absorption in a mentally generated object of meditation that is extremely difficult to attain and that attains loss of bodily awareness. What we find in the suttas is that concentration is something that arises quite spontaneously in a number of practice contexts. It's a rather bread-and-butter factor in Buddhist practice. For instance, as we practice virtue, that is, precepts, generosity, or merit-making, and develop virtuous qualities of mind, we can expect to experience samadhi. The Buddha tells us, "Monks, for a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous, no volition need be exerted. Let non-regret arise in me. It is natural that non-regret arises in one who is virtuous, one whose behavior is virtuous. For one without regret, it is natural that joy arises in one without regret. It is natural that delight arises in one who is joyful. It is natural that the body of one with a delighted mind is tranquil. It is natural that one who is tranquil in body feels pleasure. It is natural that the mind of one feeling pleasure is in a state of samadhi. Variations of this progression, delight gives rise to tranquility, tranquility gives rise to samadhi, are often repeated in the context of various Buddhist practices. Here, this progression is said to be a natural, effortless consequence of the practice of virtue. This touches on the supramundane or even mystical aspect of practice, whose experience far exceeds and is put into sharp contrast with normal, mundane experiences. The Buddha also recommends a series of recollections associated with taking refuge. When a noble disciple recollects the Buddha, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, aversion, or delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, based on the Buddha. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dharma, gains joy connected with the Dharma. When he is joyful, delight arises. For one with a delighted mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind enters samadhi. You should develop this recollection of the Buddha while walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. You should develop it while engaged in work and while living at home in a house full of children. What is said here with reference to the Buddha is then repeated for each of Dharma, Sangha, precepts, giving, and heavens. As for the practice of virtue, we note that mindfulness of the Triple Gem gives rise to the same familiar progression. Delight gives rise to tranquility. Tranquility gives rise to samadhi. Again, the process of development of right understanding is described as the stages of liberation. 1. The teacher or a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dharma to a monk. .. 2. He himself teaches the Dharma to others in detail, as he has heard it and learned it. .. 3. He recites the Dharma in detail, as he has heard it and learned it. .. 4. He ponders, examines, and mentally inspects the Dharma, as he has heard it and learned it. .. 5. He has grasped well a certain object of samadhi, attended to it well, sustained it well, and penetrated it well with wisdom. This is a series of practices involved in acquiring and internalizing right understanding, beginning with memorization of the suttas. We expect a good deal of diligence and mindful attention as we go through these steps. The last step actually refers to bringing samadhi into the picture by making the Dharma, or a particular Dharma teaching, an object of samadhi. I'll come back to what that means in later talks, but I want to point out that samadhi enters into all of the stages in a less technical way. The full passage for each of the 5 stages, with what I've abbreviated as ... filled in, concludes identically with the now familiar causal chain. Delight gives rise to tranquility, gives rise to samadhi. In whatever way he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dharma, as he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, delight arises. For one with a delighted mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind enters samadhi. It often goes unacknowledged in modern circles that recitation can be an integral part of samadhi practice. In fact, we do not generally think of the practice of virtue, refuge, or dharma study as meditation practices, but there it is, samadhi. The comprehensive overview of meditation in all of its aspects is afforded by the teaching on the seven factors of awakening, Bodhjhanga, a serial chain in which one factor provides a condition for the arising of the next. I gave a talk on the factors of awakening in this podcast series a few months ago. The factors of awakening are mindfulness, examination of phenomena, energy, delight, tranquility, samadhi, and equanimity. The early steps in this series correspond to what we call vipassana practice, the mindful examination of phenomena. What is again striking is that the same sequence, delight gives rise to tranquility, and tranquility gives rise to samadhi, occurs in vipassana practice as well. According to the Visuddhimagga, this should not happen. More simply, according to the Buddha, for one of right mindfulness, right samadhi springs up. Now, we cannot expect that every time we practice virtue, say we give a sandwich to a hobo, we will enter samadhi, nor that simply in reciting Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, nor in picking up a book to study Dharma, nor in listening to this podcast. Rather, some other factors must be involved, or maybe an overlaying of these various practices. For instance, the Buddha tells us, it is indeed to be expected that the noble disciple who has faith, whose energy is aroused, and whose mindfulness is established will gain samadhi. It seems like some degree of at least temporary purity of mind is involved. Part of this is certainly non-distractedness. We may be busy in the kitchen, virtuously preparing sandwiches to give to multiple hobos. But if we're also listening to the radio, talking with colleagues, worrying about paying the mortgage, and intent on looking cool all at the same time, we're not likely to settle into samadhi. Avoiding distractions is the purpose of the Buddha's teachings on the five hindrances, which serve as a checklist for developing a degree of mental seclusion from most of the things that are normally playing out in our heads to one degree or another. The five hindrances are lust, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. Most meditators are familiar with the five hindrances, which also exhibits the sequence: delight gives rise to tranquility, tranquility gives rise to samadhi. And when he sees himself free of these five hindrances, joy arises. In him who is joyful, delight arises. In him whose mind is delighted, the body is tranquil. The body being tranquil, he feels happiness, and a happy mind finds samadhi. The Buddha gives a wide variety of other unpointed factors as conditions for samadhi, which in one combination or another seems to put you over the top. These include faith, mindfulness, ardency, alertness, seclusion, peace and quiet, investigation, delight, pleasure, tranquility, virtue, and wisdom, not to mention sitting at the root of a tree in meditation posture. In fact, right concentration is only possible on the basis of practicing the seven previous folds of the Noble Eightfold Path. There are right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, and right mindfulness. The unification of mind equipped with these seven factors is called noble right concentration with its supports and accessories. Now, this bread and butter aspect of samadhi raises questions about what kind of state samadhi is. Is it really a state of absorption as described in the Visuddhimagga? In fact, two different kinds of mental state described in the modern literature can potentially be identified with samadhi. There is some controversy about this. The first of these is often called absorption and is described by a contemporary author like this. Absorption is about focusing the mind to a single point, unifying it, placing it upon a particular object. If this process of steadying the mind on a single object is allowed to mature, it will eventually reach a stage called absorption. In this state, the mind is so thoroughly attending to a particular object that it is no longer aware of other objects that might present themselves at a sense door. This seems like a targeted effort, not a state that arises spontaneously or without strong effort. Moreover, it does not seem compatible with any of the practices we've been talking about that give rise to samadhi. Entering absorption in the midst of handing a hobo a sandwich is likely to appear very odd, and in the midst of studying Dharma is likely to be counterproductive. Moreover, absorption does not seem suitable for mindful investigation of phenomena, as in the awakening factors. Absorption also does not sound like the way the Buddha characterizes samadhi. Just as if there were a pool of water in a mountain glen, clear, limpid, and unsullied, where a man with good eyesight standing on a bank could see shells, gravels, and pebbles, and also shoals of fish swimming about and resting. In the same way, with his mind thus in samadhi, purified and bright, unblemished, free from defects, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, the monk directs and inclines it to the knowledge of the ending of the mental fermentations. Compare this also to how samadhi was understood in ancient China some 1500 years after the Buddha by Zen master Hong Zhi. Roam and play in samadhi. Every detail clearly appears before you. Sound and form, echo and shadow, happen instantly without leaving traces. Respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. The subtlety of seeing and hearing transcends mere colors and sounds. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. All of this suggests that the samadhi the Buddha taught is not absorption that focuses the mind on a single object. It has more to do with a kind of wide open awareness that can arise quite easily under conditions of mental purity. Now, for meditators among listeners to this broadcast, the kind of mental state I am describing likely sounds familiar, but you might not call it samadhi. In fact, you might call it mindfulness. Here is a description of mindfulness by a modern author. Unlike one-pointedness and absorption, mindfulness tends to open to a broader range of phenomena rather than restricting the focus to a single object. Like a floodlight rather than a spotlight, mindfulness illuminates a more fluid phenomenological field of ever-changing experience. The concentrated mind is then directed to a moving target, the flowing stream of consciousness, rather than being allowed to stabilize on a single point. Mindfulness practice allows the mind to follow whatever is arising in experience. There is less a sense of controlling what the awareness is resting upon, and more care given to how awareness is manifesting. More generally, in the Vipassana tradition, sati, the Pali word we translate as mindfulness, is generally defined as something like bare attention or the moment-to-moment non-judgmental awareness of whatever arises in the present moment. So, mindfulness, samadhi, what is the difference? Good question. It turns out that this is an entirely 20th century definition of mindfulness. There's nothing like it in any early Buddhist texts. The word sati actually means memory. Here is the Buddha's definition of sati or mindfulness. And what is the faculty of sati? Here, monks, the noble disciple is recollective, possessing utmost recollection and discernment, recalling and bearing in mind even things that were done and said long ago. This is the faculty of sati. What's going on? I take this up in an essay on my website, How Did Mindfulness Become Bare, Non-Judgmental, Present Moment Awareness? Now, mindfulness is a very important factor in all of Buddhist practice as we remember the Dharma as we meet each new practice situation in turn. However, mindfulness is something we do and get very good at doing, not a state of mind. We remember at the appropriate moment. However, in all contexts of practice, given non-distractedness and diligence, samadhi is not far behind. Because of the influence of the Visuddhimagga in Theravada Buddhism and in Vipassana, in which samadhi is single-pointed absorption, we fail to identify samadhi as such. Yet it is a prominent element of the experience of Buddhist practice. Therefore, it has been attributed to mindfulness. Next week, I expect I will talk not about the arising of samadhi, but about its purpose in Buddhist practice, how it is utilized. Thank you.